and welcome to the podcast that throws on its big number 9 in the dying embers of a game to score two potentially season-defining goals in stoppage time. It's the big man up top.
Yes, it is. Welcome to the podcast. How are you, Joe?
I'm good, Ed. I thought I'd bring in that reference because you don't seem to think this is a big story.
Well, look, I think we need to chat about this. This is the Liverpool-Darwin Nunez discussion.
We'll come on to this, but we had a pre-episode meeting and I said, well, obviously we should talk about Darwin Nunez.
Yeah.
And you said, is that much of a story?
Exactly. And he wasn't having any of it, and neither was I, quite frankly.
No, so, clearly not.
So, yes, we shall return to this later on. But it's time for Bible Ballers, isn't
Straight
it, Joe?
Into the trivia.
It's what the people want. So, I am quizzing you today, Joe. How are you feeling?
Actually, Ed, I'm not good.
Why?
Now, I have a bit of a bone to pick with you.
Why do you?
Obviously, the last couple of weeks, as we've mentioned, producer Anthony hasn't been here.
No.
Has he? So that's meant you have been tasked with editing the podcast yourself.
Yeah.
Which, you know,
I think I've done a pretty good job, to be fair.
Fair play to you. I've trusted you with that job. I think overall you've done quite a good job. You know, smooth listening experience. You've managed to take all of our waffle and put them into near enough half an hour
each
week. However, last week's trivia question, I feel you edited quite a lot of thinking time out. I can't remember the question itself, but the answer was John Carew.
Yeah.
And I would say you took a good 10 minutes of thinking time.
That's absolutely not true at all.
About 10 minutes. And whilst I'm not saying you should keep all 10 minutes in the episode, I do feel like you, listening back, you got to the answer John Carew very quickly, and that's not how I remember it.
Well, what I will say is, you know, you're right, I definitely edited some of the thinking time out, because nobody wants to hear me, you know, deliberate.
But I just don't think it portrayed what actually happened in the studio.
Well, I think it gave across the exact vibe. I wasn't entirely sure. You gave me far too many clues, and I managed to guess it.
Well, all I have to say is I'm glad Anthony's back.
Glad Anthony's back, yes. Welcome back, sir. So, this is Bible Ballers. It's guess the player with a difference. The twist is that this player's first name will be also the same as the name of a book in the Bible.
So, let's do it.
Which Spanish defender signed for a Premier League club in 2019 but didn't make his Premier League debut until February 2023 after signing for a different club in a debut which prompted a former manager to say he is so bad it's unbelievable? What are your thoughts?
That's really hard. It took him 4 years to make his debut.
Yeah.
Was that because he was really bad? Or did he go out on loan?
So he signed for a Premier League club in 2019. He then went out on loan twice.
Okay.
Then he signed for a different team abroad. And then he
came back
to the Premier League.
Gosh, I'm stumped, Ed.
What I will say as another clue, he is Spanish. I have checked the Spanish Bible books names.
Oh, are you joking?
No.
Oh, Ed, you're gonna have to give me some time.
I'll give you some time, Joe. Don't you worry. Don't you worry.
So, Ed, before we dive into the roundup of the weekend, some sad news this week that Manchester United legend Dennis Law sadly passed away at the age of 84. I mean, he was obviously quite a bit before my time and your time, but do you have any memories of hearing your dad, your granddad talking about Dennis Law as a player?
Well, I think if you've just been around football, you know about Dennis Law and his place in particularly Man United folklore, as it was. But Man City as well, he played quite a few games for Man City. United fans called him the King, and he was part of the United Trinity with Bobby Charlton and George Best. Interestingly, at the weekend when they paid tribute to him, they had Brian Kidd, Paddy Crerand, Alex Stepney and Alex Ferguson walk out onto the pitch as part of the tribute. And that's the sort of company that he was in. He's in, one of the greatest footballers, not just of his generation, but in history of the game. He was the only Scottish winner of the Ballon d'Or. Actually, all three of the United Trinity, Best, Charlton and Law, all won the Ballon d'Or in the 60s. And yeah, he'll be very much missed.
Absolutely. And some really nice tributes to him, as you mentioned, over the weekend. As well as that, some really sad news at the Portsmouth Middlesbrough game this weekend, where sadly a fan passed away just before kickoff. The emergency services did a great job in responding to what was going on, but very sadly, he passed away before kickoff. So our thoughts and our prayers go out to those affected.
It's been an amazing week in the Premier League, Joe, hasn't it? Not just this weekend, yes. But we've had two game weeks this season.
Yes, since we last recorded, Ed, there's been a lot of goals, a lot of games, a lot of drama, actually. Where should we start?
Can we start with Everton?
Yeah.
Is that all right?
Let's do that.
Because I think, look, especially in the early days of this podcast, where we were trying to get cheap laughs because we were desperate to sort of bring listeners on side.
We wanted to be funny, didn't we?
We wanted to be funny, and you know, we're not that funny.
No.
But a really easy way to get a laugh was to say, hey, look at Everton.
Yeah, that'll make anyone laugh.
Exactly. And actually, you know, their fans have really been through it this season, and they've had their ups and downs, mainly downs. And this was a massive up for them, wasn't it?
Yeah, huge. I think you sat down to watch this game and you were like, oh, this is going to be it. The Sunday 2 p.m. kickoff is where it's at. And it delivered.
Absolutely.
Everton went 3-0 up in the first half, which hasn't happened for a long time. I'm sure there's a stat.
It's definitely not happened since David Moyes was first at the club.
No, I don't think it has. But they looked really good. And it's hard to know, of course, how much of this is Everton being good, Tottenham allowing people to play through them.
Probably a bit of both.
Probably is, yeah. And yeah, really entertaining game. Everton looked great. Dominic Calvert-Lewin scored.
He looked like Ronaldo, didn't he?
He did.
First goal.
I said he looked a bit like prime Benzema as he weaves through those defenders and found the gap. It was so good to watch him scoring goals again. And yeah, hopefully this will be a bit of a kickstart for the second coming of David Moyes.
Absolutely. And then an even better goal, arguably, from Ndiaye. The third goal, which was an own goal from Archie Gray, who is the defender that looks like that lovely lad in your church's youth group,
I think.
But unfortunately, put one in his own net. It's just one win, isn't it? But
sure.
It was just the manner of it, I think, that will really encourage Everton
I think
fans.
It's the manner of it. I think it's the performance. I think every manager wants to start off like this. Obviously, they played Villa in midweek and it was a bit of a drab game. I think they were hoping for a bit more passion from the players, but they certainly got that in this game. And yeah, let's see where they go. I think they've got a distinct style of play under Moyes. I think he's clearly ingrained his tactics already. And yeah, we'll see where it goes.
And what about Spurs? Because this feels like crisis territory, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think Ange hasn't got long left, I have to say. I think for quite a while now they've camped out on this, oh, it's entertaining, like this is what we watch football for. But I think if you're a Spurs fan, you're now just like, they're on a really bad run.
Yeah, it's not looking good. It felt like watching Southampton earlier in the season.
A little bit, yeah.
Can we talk a little bit about Ange?
Sure.
Because I think, again, he was sort of one of those figures that I think generally we quite liked. I certainly had a lot of time for him, but it feels like he's starting to unravel a little bit, doesn't it?
I think when he first came into the Premier League, he was quite likeable, wasn't he? He was quite easy to listen to. He wasn't as diplomatic as the other managers. He had things to say. But I think this was inevitable, that as form started to turn bad, I think he was going to start to turn sour.
Yeah, I mean, if any of you saw the BBC post-match press conference, he was borderline aggressive towards the journalist who was asking him questions. And it just felt very, very unnecessary. Yeah. You know, hopefully he can turn himself, he can have a good hard look in the mirror, Joe. Yeah. Because we don't want any of that.
And soon he'll turn into that fun-loving uncle that we all want.
Exactly. Bournemouth, big win for them at the weekend.
Yeah, huge win. 4-1 away at Newcastle, which no one does. No one wins away at Newcastle.
And Newcastle have, you know, been in really good form and looked a shadow of themselves, really. But it was a, you know, really great win for Bournemouth. Anything stick out at you there?
Well, I think just an all-round good performance. Justin Kluivert's second hat-trick of the season. I think if Nottingham Forest didn't have the season they're having, I think we'd be talking a lot more about Bournemouth this year. They're having such a good season. They're fighting for Champions League places. But just because Forest are having an even better season, it feels like they've gone under the radar a little bit. But yeah, really good attacking play. I think Iraola is really staking a claim to be one of the top coaches in the Premier League this season.
Yeah, it's sort of just very much quietly being brilliant, aren't they?
And he'll inevitably move to Tottenham in a few weeks' time and it'll all crumble down.
It'll all go wrong. That is, unless Nuno doesn't go back. Forest, Chris Wood, again, it's the same combinations. It's all clicking,
isn't
it?
It's working. I think it was quite nice the other night. watching Forest against Liverpool, and this is a big game. This is how it should be, right?
Yeah.
Like, Forest-Liverpool is a top-of-the-table clash.
Yeah.
And there was something quite nostalgic. We spoke about nostalgia last week, Ed.
Two European giants.
Yes, they just look great. Very good defensively. They do play on the counter-attack quite well. Second half against Liverpool, they didn't really do much, but they'd done so much in the first half defensively that they got the point, and then really good win against Southampton at the weekend, although they nearly let it slip at the end.
Yes, it was sort of similar to the Everton game in the sense that they'll be disappointed that they weren't 5-0 up because that's how many chances they had, but they sort of let them get into the game a bit and sort of could have gone either way at the end, but I still think very much value for it. Let's have a look at Man United.
Oh, yes, please.
So United's sort of bogey team as of the last, well, I was going to say as of late, but as of the last 5 years at the very least, Brighton getting another win.
Yeah, I feel like you see United Brighton on the fixture list and it's almost got to a point now where you expect a Brighton win. They've won 6 of the last 7 meetings against each other. And I think we saw this coming a little bit. We've praised United a little bit. They played really well against Liverpool. They played really well against Arsenal in the Cup. They had a clear plan and structure there. And you just looked at these two fixtures, Southampton at home, Brighton at home, and you thought, these are the fixtures that are going to define this kind of upwards curve in form. They're either going to carry on, they're going to play really well, or they're going to scrape through or lose, and that's kind of what's happened.
Well, this is it, and United seem to be doing really well against sort of top 5, top 6 teams, and then, you know, which is all very well and good, but then if you can't beat the sort of bottom 15, then you're going to struggle, aren't you?
In his post-match press conference, Amorim said, "We are the worst team maybe in the history of Manchester United." It's not a glowing review.
It's not a glowing review, no. I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? Because, I mean, let's be honest, it's probably true.
Yeah.
You know, if you think, especially in the Premier League era, and I know football didn't begin in 1992, but in recent memory, this is probably the worst Man United have ever played. And he's coming into the job. He knows that's not on him. He's just giving an honest assessment of what it is. At the same time, I feel like that can't go down well in the dressing room if you're telling the world, look, my team is not very good.
And you say it's not on him. I agree to an extent, but when is it on him? At what point does it become his problem?
Looking at the analysis from the Brighton game, you could sort of see that the thing that they really struggled with was getting out of this 5-at-the-back formation that they were in, and they needed to push on and the defenders weren't, which very much feels like that's not a player making a decision, that is a managerial tactical decision. And so you're right, I think it is, you know, you do have to, at a certain point it will come back on him, and you know, somebody's got to make a change somewhere, haven't they?
Yeah.
Let's talk about Liverpool, Joe.
Let's do that.
So what did you make of the game in general?
Well, I feel like Liverpool have had a bit of a mini blip, you could say, the last couple of weeks. They've drawn a couple. They lost in the Cup to Tottenham. So there was a lot of pressure on this game. You see Brentford away and you think, it's a tricky game. You know, City drew 2-2 there last week, threw away a 2-0 lead. So going into this, wasn't confident at all. But Liverpool played really well in this game. They had about 37 shots.
Wow.
Which is a away Premier League record. Played really well. But it took a 90+1 minute and a 90+3 minute goal from your friend of mine, Darwin Núñez.
Yes. Now, you're a big fan of Darwin Núñez.
Huge fan.
And in our pre-podcast meeting, you were very adamant that this was one of the big talking points of the weekend.
I think it is,
which I completely disagree.
Why is that?
This is Liverpool get a win away at Brentford, which, you know,
tricky.
Tricky, but not impossible, considering they're basically champions-elect.
Sure.
Striker comes off the bench and scores a late winner. That's basically, you know.
But it's a huge moment. It's a 0-0 for 90 minutes.
Yeah.
And you're sat there thinking, what a missed opportunity. You have to look at it in the context of the game.
Yeah.
That Liverpool needed a goal. They bring on Darwin Núñez. Darwin Núñez.
Yeah, who's a striker and should score goals.
But has had absolutely...
That's what he's paid a lot of money to do, Joe.
He's had a lot of stick this season. And even as Liverpool fans, you see him come on and you think, he's not going to do it. But he does it, Ed.
He does it,
This is what he does. And he's set the record for the most away Premier League winners in stoppage time.
It feels like a nonsense statistic.
Two of them in this game.
One of them against Nottingham Forest
last season.
Well, listen, fair enough.
But on a serious note, I think this is what Darwin Núñez is for. He's not your starting striker. Yes, they paid about 80 million for him, but he's actually not a starting striker. Whenever he starts, he doesn't really play that well, particularly this season. But he's the player you bring on when you need something different, when you need some chaos.
Well, listen, we'll have to agree to disagree on whether this was one of the big talking points of the weekend. But I am happy for Núñez because you're right, he does get a lot of stick, and you know, and he works very hard. He get into a Tony Pulis team. Speaking of tactical genius, Man City and Pep Guardiola.
Are they back, Ed?
Well, they might be. They might be. A 6-0 win away at Ipswich. Now, Ipswich have been sort of doing okay, playing quite well. Yeah. And they started this game quite brightly, actually, considering the end result. Yeah. But at the end of the day, City sort of just clicked into gear, and all of a sudden it felt like the old City again, didn't it?
It did. Ipswich have only won 3 games this season. They do have defensive frailties. But saying that, going forward at the start, like you say, they looked good. They found pockets of space between Man City's midfield. I think there were a few moments that you saw where Rodri would help again with Man City.
And I think it is safe to say, though, that this was the first time since their sort of return to form, because they've had a few wins, but they've been unconvincing.
And against weaker teams.
Exactly. And for me, this was the first time you thought, oh, okay.
Yeah. 100%.
Here we go.
And what is going to help them, Ed, is that they're going to have the same striker over the next 10 years. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, I've got to be honest, this was quite a big sort of headline, but I'd completely missed that Cole Palmer signed a 9-year contract with Chelsea.
Yeah. So just to catch you up on this, if you missed it, Erling Haaland last week signed a 9.5-year contract.
I mean, who knows where they're going to be in 10 years, Joe?
It's a long
time. It's like one of those hypothetical questions you get asked in a job interview, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where are you going to be in 10 years' time? Well, Haaland will know.
Yeah, Haaland knows
he will still be at Man City.
Yeah. And this is where I'm a bit sceptical, because I'd be surprised if Pep Guardiola is still there at that time. I'd be surprised if Pep Guardiola is there in 2 years' time, past his contract. I personally think this is Man City's way of not letting him leave for free,
yeah,
which is what you're kind of seeing with Liverpool at the moment with Mo Salah, Van Dijk and Trent. I think they've seen that. They're a bit scared by that. So sign him in for $500,000 a week. Ed, why don't you give us a quick whistle-stop tour of the EFL?
Yeah, I will do. So I think the big one in the Championship was Cardiff 3, Swansea 0. Now, this was a really good win for Cardiff in the South Wales derby, but it's been a difficult week for their manager, Omar Reza, as his father had passed away, but returned in time to galvanise his team to a resounding 3-0 win. And their assistant manager said in the post-match press conference, he was sort of back and forth between his home to spend the last moments with his dad. And what he said was that what's been such a warming feeling is the support he's had from players, staff and the fans. And so they took a lot of comfort from that.
Another example of where football is nowhere near as big as these kind of things.
Absolutely.
But also a place where it unites us for support.
Yeah. Huge win for Leeds, 3-0 at home to Sheffield Wednesday. Really looking like the team that we sort of know they can be. Mm. It is safe to say there are issues at Sheffield Wednesday. It's come out over the last week that the chairman and manager haven't spoken in a month, which is not good around the January transfer window. Sheffield United won. We're actually temporarily top of the league. They have 2 wins on the bounce now, after a tricky Christmas period. In League One, Wrexham were defeated 2-1 away at Shrewsbury. But the biggest story in this one was the crowd trouble. There was a lot of abuse directed towards James McLean. Now, this is no new story, is it? You know, we do know that objects were thrown at him. We also do know that James McLean directed some very derogatory abuse towards Shrewsbury fans on social media, which he's now since taken down. All of this we don't like at all. But yes, Wrexham getting beaten by Shrewsbury. Wickham and Birmingham both winning to create a bit of a gap at the top there, taking advantage of it. League Two, Walsall won at home for their 9th win on the bounce.
Unbelievable.
I know, yes. And Port Vale also with a huge comeback win to go back into the automatic promotion spots there. Salford, who were on a 6-game winning run, that was brought to an end by Fleetwood. So, oh. You know, it's swings and roundabouts, isn't it, Joe?
Confidence knocked after their 8-0 drubbing from the noisy neighbours.
Well, exactly. Just a couple of quick points elsewhere in football. Scottish Premier League, Aberdeen are having a right time. They started the season with 11 wins in their first 13, broke all sorts of records. But they're now 12 games without a win, which is also a club record.
What a season.
So they've gone from being outstanding to really, really not so in the Scottish Premier League. And also in the Women's Super League, it was the Manchester Derby.
The big one.
The United beat City 4-2 with Ella Toon scoring a hat-trick on her return after a calf injury.
Yes, very nice to see. Ed, I've got a question for you.
Hit me, Joe.
It's actually not a football-related question. Do you mind?
I don't mind at all.
I want to know...
I might actually know something about this.
Do you remember when you first shared your faith with someone?
Yes. I became a Christian when I was very young. Hmm. So I was around 9 or 10. And I remember being very passionate about my faith then. So much so that I would write messages about Jesus and do little drawings of crosses and fish on my pencil case. And I got a lot of mick taken out of me by other kids in school. But it also sort of opened up some interesting conversations with people as well. So yeah, that was the way I chose to do it at the age of 10.
It's something we can overthink, I think. As we get older, we become more conscious of ourselves. I like that you shared a story of when you're a child, because I think it's a lot easier as a child to do it. But as we get older, we're adults now, Ed.
Yeah, yeah.
Some people have been adults for longer than me. But all that to say, we want to have this conversation about sharing your faith. And you sat down with Graham Daniels, who is involved in Christians in Sport. Why don't you tell us about your chat with him?
Yeah, so I wanted to find out a bit about Christians in Sport and what they do. And as you'll hear from the interview, he basically just, instead of telling me about Christians in Sport, just told me about his testimony. We did have a longer conversation, but we just got into so much great chat about his story and the power of when somebody shares something and you don't really think about it, just a throwaway comment, and what impact that can have on people. So I thought this would be a great time to have a listen to this chat with Graham Daniels.
Great.
Well, I'm delighted today to be joined by Graham Daniels from Christians in Sport. How are you doing, Graham?
How are you doing, Ed? Good, thank you.
Very good, very good. So let's start by hearing a little bit about Christians in Sport, what you guys do and sort of what's the mission of the organisation.
Well, I reckon I could tell you in the most easy way by telling you my own story, which is I'm a 15-year-old kid. My school cricket team's short of an 11th man. I go because somebody's got to make up the numbers. But on the bus is an 18-year-old boy who's captain of cricket, captain of rugby, best athlete at school. And on the way back, it's a 50-mile journey. He's kind enough to sit next to me because I don't know anyone. And he asked me what I did at the weekend. I was in year 10. I said, I played cricket Saturday. Did nothing Sunday because it was years ago in Wales and everything was shut. I said, what did you do? He said, I played cricket Saturday. I went to church on Sunday. He was 18. He was king of school. He had a beard and everything. I said to him, whoa, why do you go to church? And he blushed and he said, because I followed Jesus. It turned out a few years later, it was the first time he'd ever told anyone he was a Christian, tried to witness to somebody. And I just said to myself when he said it to me, blimey. It was a 50-mile trip. We were on just out of Cardiff. I said to myself, blimey, 45 miles to go. I'm next to a nutter. But the reality was that 7 years later, I became a Christian as a young footballer. And I became a Christian partly because that bloke broke the mould. I mean, I'd never put those two things together, even in the sort of 1970s, if, you know, forever ago, I just didn't put those two things together. And then I realized you could be a real keen sportsman and a Christian. So rather than give a description of Christians in Sport in the broadest sense, it's almost as much of a verb as a noun. It's if somebody knows Jesus personally and they're involved in sport, how can they make a difference to their teammates and their colleagues and their fellow supporters around them while still being dead normal, which is what my man was. So that's Christians in Sport, you know, whether it's youth, a university, international, domestic, pros, it really doesn't matter. That's what it is. That's what it is.
Goodness me, that's a superb story. And isn't it fascinating, the sort of the impacts that we don't know we have? I'm sure he's sort of blown away by knowing what impact that's had on a young Graham.
Ed, it drives him mad because I tell everyone the story. And so he says, will you stop telling that story? Because he's embarrassed that he's being held up for it. But that's it, isn't it, Ed? It works because you can make everything very sophisticated and complicated. It seems to me that if God's kind enough to reach any of us and draw us into himself, then the best thing we can do is trust what he made us to be in the first place and let him change us in that place. And that's what my mate was, you know, that's what he was. He was a Christian, he was in sport, and he found his way over the years to putting them both together. And I saw it. It's a brilliant thing.
Just off the back of that, how has that then impacted the way you share your faith?
Well, the biggest impact was after I became a Christian, age 21 or 22-ish, I left home in Wales. I was in Cambridge to play. And I was back in Wales and I went to that guy's house. His name was Gwion. I went to his house and his dad said to me, do you know what happened that day? So it's like 7 years later, right? I said, no, what happened? He said, he came home on Monday and his dad said, how was the game? Cricket match. And he said, yeah, all right. And his dad said, oh, all right. What? Didn't play well? He said, yeah. He said, any runs? Yeah, 90. Get any wickets? Well, yeah, 5. Oh, so what's the matter? He said, well, you know, in church yesterday, there was a talk about sharing the good news about Jesus. And it dawned on me that I've never really told anyone. So I was determined on Monday I was going to talk about Jesus to somebody. And then this guy, this is what he told his dad. This guy's, we had to make up the numbers. We took this guy from year 10. I sat next to him on the way home. I asked him what he did the weekend. He asked me. I told him I went to church. And dad, I blushed. And I said, stupid. I said, because I follow Jesus. How rubbish was that? He said, I must be the worst evangelist ever. I'm never doing it again. But the Lord used that in the end to transform my whole life because I could see there could be a Jesus who could reach me from God. So that's coloured my evangelism. Everyone's a useless evangelist. Anyone who thinks they're any good is a big time Charlie. God's just kind and he uses idiots like me to tell somebody else about Jesus and he gets to work when he's ready. So that's how I see evangelism. I said it earlier, Ed, but try and be good at being normal and say something about Jesus. And of course, if you're not normal, you probably hang out with people who aren't normal, so you're normal to them anyway. So it's fine.
And I love that. So on a recent podcast, we chatted with Bruce Dyer.
Oh, what? He's a giant. Yeah,
what a man he is. And he shared about his faith journey and said that he just basically walked into the dressing room of whatever club he was at. I think he said it was Palace at the time.
Palace it was.
And he just walked in and said, I've given my life to Jesus. And the dressing room just laughed at him, you know. Yeah, but I loved that was the expression of faith for him. He just walked straight in and says, Jesus has changed my life, you know.
Oh, there are one or two in the world who are unstoppable out there, and he's definitely one. I was 10 years earlier than Bruce. Hardly anyone was a Christian. I mean, you'd never really talk about it inside professional football. But I do think, well, today it's totally different. There isn't a dressing room in the country where there aren't 7 or 8 people who meet to pray together before a game. It's just normal. And it's all happened in the last few years. I think the likes of Bruce Dyer, Cyril Regis, Gavin Peacock, big names back in the 90s, I think those guys, when there were hardly any Christians, gained massive respect from their teammates. Good players, great blokes. And I think what's happened is lots of those people who may not be Christians still, who played with those boys like Bruce, who are now managers and coaches and directors of football in the football world, when they've met Christians, their impression of a Christian would be a Bruce Dyer or Gavin Peacock or a Cyril Regis. And so they actually welcome Christians and it actually makes it easier to be a Christian in a changing room, even as a young, shy boy, you know, as a 16 or 17-year-old. And I think people like Bruce, when God's economy works it all out at the end, we'll find out that people like those were the ones who made it possible for hundreds of people to be Christians in football today. I really do think that.
We love the good old-fashioned big man up top on this podcast. So what I want to know is if you were putting together your dream 11, who would be your big man up top?
Well, I reckon, I've got to say this, I've got no option because Dion Dublin's on the board of Cambridge United. So if I don't say Dion, I'm done for. I'm absolutely done for. And boy, was he a force. And you really couldn't get near him. When the ball went up to him, it stuck. You never got hold of it again, unless it was in the net. So I'll have to go for the Dublin, or else I'll be in all sorts of trouble. But real oldies, for real oldies, if anyone listens to this who's ancient, John Toshack, the Liverpool centre forward, Cardiff City and Wales, Toshack.
Welsh legend.
Legend. So Dublin first, Toshack second.
Brilliant. That's wonderful. Graham, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
What I love about that chat, Ed, is he speaks about making it normal. You know, I think when you think about sharing your faith with someone, I know I personally hear that and think you have to, you know, you have to set it up well, you have to tell this groundbreaking story, and you bring it into land,
yeah,
as we say, with a sucker punch of give your life to Christ.
Yeah.
And that's not the way, is it? Let's make this a more normal part of our conversation.
Yeah, I think ultimately, like, every situation is different, you know, and in some situations you might need to have sort of an elaborate thing laid out. But actually, I think in most ways, most occasions, we just want to be normal people with a faith.
Yeah.
We just want to be normal men.
We do.
You know,
all women.
All women. We just want to be normal people with a faith, and actually finding ways to share that naturally is really, really important.
Yeah. And I think you imagine how these conversations go, and I think you can get into your own head about it. But actually, it's becoming more and more normal to bring it up and talk about it in a normal conversation.
I think one of the things that's really fascinating is there was some research done by the Evangelical Alliance called Talking Jesus that was done a few years ago now, where they spoke to a huge array of people across the country to talk about their opinions on the Christian faith, on Christian churches, and on Christians in general. And it was really, really fascinating. And actually, it was very encouraging as well. And what it sort of showed is that actually, broadly speaking, non-Christians have a good opinion on Christians, and they are open to conversations about faith. Mm. I think often we can get in our head that, oh, actually, people don't like Christians, or people don't want to have these conversations. And whilst that's definitely the case in, you know, so in some people's opinion, but generally speaking, people do like Christians, and they do want to have conversations about faith. It's just finding easy, natural, non-awkward ways to do it.
100%. I think we're in a space, particularly now, where people are actually searching for something, particularly in this kind of spiritual realm. I think it's becoming more and more normal to talk about this kind of thing. My wife and I, we have a few friends that aren't Christians, but are certainly searching for something. I think of one friend who we'll hang out with, and they'll talk about different things, talk about journaling, talk about horoscopes, all this kind of spiritual thing. And I actually find it quite inspiring when I speak to them, because it's like, you're speaking about this in such a normal way. Why can't I talk about my faith in such a normal way like that? It kind of encourages me to bring me out of my shell and talk about what's going on in my faith and my church, that kind of thing, in such a normal way.
Yeah. And I think what one of the things is that, first of all, for me, for us to get anywhere in this conversation, we have to be in the conversation. And I think that's really important. We have to be present in people's lives. So we talked a few weeks ago about being part of our clubs and our communities. And that's a huge thing. We have to be present in the world. We can't just be sitting in our Christian bubble and be avoiding people. You know, we have to be present in people's lives, you know, so get to know your neighbors, get to know the people in your community. And then I think, like, sharing your journey as well is really important, because the thing is, again, you were talking about getting in our own heads. I think we can get very worried about, oh, well, what if they ask me to prove that God exists or something? We don't have to have all the answers.
No.
And in fact, often it's better if we don't. And we're able to go, look, I don't know, but what I know is what's happened in my life. And just start there and just see where that goes.
Yeah. And also, I think this doesn't need to be an intense one-to-one, face-to-face conversation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think sometimes you think about it as, we'll go for a coffee, we will sit down and we will have a conversation about my faith, and then you will become a Christian and then we will be happy. This is what I love about football. You know, football is such an easy thing to talk about. It's also such an easy thing to say, hey, shall we go and watch a game down a pub, or even go to the game itself? I think I found in my life that some of the best conversations I have with friends is during a football game, because it's such an easy, relaxed kind of environment, and you can just be like, oh, what's going on with you?
There's a verse in 2 Timothy that says, so do not be ashamed of the testimony about our Lord. And there's other verses elsewhere that talk about how the word of one's testimony is so important. And I think that that's the key thing to remember is when we feel like we're in a situation where we want to share our faith or we feel led to share our faith, I think the best thing we can do is talk about our own experience. And actually, it's really interesting that we think that this maybe doesn't match up with football, but actually, there are so many Premier League footballers now who are sharing about their faith. The other night, I was on Instagram, as you do, and I was flicking through Trevor Chalobah's Instagram account. And it is full of testimonies of what God is doing in his life. And it is so encouraging. And it's really inspiring. Now, we don't have to do the same thing that he is doing, but he's choosing to use his platform to share his faith. And it's just encouraging that we can do the same in our own way and in our own situation.
Absolutely. And to go back to Graham's story, you don't know what impact that's going to have.
Yeah.
You might leave a conversation, like he said, just be like, oh, I can't believe I've said that. Or, oh, I've really missed that opportunity. You don't know the seeds that you're planting in your conversations. So just be encouraged that when you are having these conversations, God can use what you are saying in any way.
Absolutely. Okay, Joe, you've had some time to think about this week's Bible Ballers question. How are you feeling about it? Are you feeling good?
Ed, you are a ridiculous man.
Why am I ridiculous?
I'm saying.
Why am I a ridiculous man? Is it because I've given you a really difficult one?
Yeah.
I'll read the question out again.
Give me the question.
Okay. Which Spanish defender signed for a Premier League club in 2019 but didn't make his Premier League debut until February 2023 after signing for a different club in a debut which prompted a former manager to say, he is so bad, it's unbelievable?
I feel like I have a vague recollection of that comment.
Okay.
I think your comment before about the Spanish Bible has given me a bit of encouragement.
Okay.
So I'm in the Bible now, or should I say Lost Bible?
Lost Bible.
I'm looking at different, like, Spanish variations of Bible names.
Good.
Joshua. Could that be Jose? I don't know.
Could be.
What I do know, I think Peter in Spanish is Pedro.
Okay.
Is there a book of Pedro in the Spanish Bible?
There is.
There is. In which case, I think this is Pedro Porro, because I think he's played for Man City or been on Man City's books before.
Are you going to lock in?
Yes, I am. I am.
Locking in Pedro Porro is correct. Well done.
Get in.
Well done. See, I feel like I gave you the clues there. I didn't want you to go down the route of, you know, you being angry at me for using Pedro.
If I hadn't got, I would be angry.
I think as long as I've said it was a Spanish defender, right?
You know?
Anyway,
I think you're throwing me a bit of a bone there with the Spanish Bible thing.
That's fine. That's fine. I'm a generous man.
You are. You've made up for last week, I'd say.
Pedro Porro is absolutely right. He signed for Man City in 2019. He was there until 2022, but didn't actually play for them. He went out on loan to Valladolid and then to Sporting, signed permanently for Sporting, and then went to Tottenham on loan, and then signed for Tottenham Hotspur in 2023. It was actually Spurs former manager Tim Sherwood.
Oh, I see.
Who said of his first game for Tottenham, he is so bad it's unbelievable.
Wow.
Which feels a bit harsh, Tim.
A bit harsh. I'd say he's all right.
Yeah, and he's now probably one of the best defenders in the Premier League. But yes, well done, Joe.
Thank you very much. That was satisfying, Ed. Thank you.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
Thank you very much for listening to The Big Man Up Top. If you want to get in touch with the show, please ping us an email to podcast@ucb.co.uk. Please follow, subscribe, and give us some good reviews if you'd like to. This will help us get the word out. And also, if you've enjoyed this, please tell your mates. Also, a huge thank you to our returning producer, Anthony Salamat-Webb.
Back from injury. Or holiday.
From a short spell away. For all his hard work behind the scenes, there will be a new episode, I'm thinking, next Tuesday, Ed.
Let's do that. We've done them every Tuesday so far. Should we carry on?
I think that sounds good. It's working well so far.
Good stuff. See you later, Joe.
See you, Ed.